It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I have a headline to read. You'll think I'm reading from the Babylon Bee, or you'll think I'm reading from The Onion, but no, this is an actual news story published by an actual newspaper. At least they still think of themselves as real journalism. I'm reading from The Atlantic. Here is a headline, and it's coming out of concern, of course, over what's going on with Russia and Ukraine and the threat of nuclear war. Here's the headline. On top of everything else, nuclear war would be a climate problem. Really? Well, yeah, sure, a nuclear war would not be the best thing for our atmosphere. I guess I'm forced to concede that. Still, I can't help but think that after a nuclear war, there may not be anybody left to complain. Most people in the proximity would be dead immediately. Those who somehow are not incinerated in the blast would eventually die of radiation, including those who live far away as winds carry the fallout. And the few who might survive ultimately may just have one or two matters on their mind before they hold their next climate change summit. This is like somebody losing their teenage daughter to a kidnapper, getting a note for ransom, and the first thing they worry about is that she's going to miss her favorite program on TV if she doesn't come home soon. This would be like during the Holocaust, somebody looking at all the trains carrying Jews to concentration camps and commenting on how much coal is being used to run the trains and how many other conventional trains are not running on time because so many trains are being used to take people to Auschwitz. All right, I'm being quite sarcastic, but I'm not far off. I'm not far off. A number of years ago, some Palestinian terrorists blew up some Jews. PETA came on the air to complain because some donkeys were killed with them. They never had anything to say while Jews were being murdered, but murdering a donkey? Oh, that's another story. My friends, my dearest friends, none of this should be a surprise. This tendency on the part of the left to not recognize genuine evil and catastrophic threat has been going on for a long, long time. Let's go back to the year 2015. After a murderous ISIS attack on Paris, then-President Obama vowed to do more about climate change. That sure showed the Mr. President. I'm reading from CNN, November of 2015. Combating climate change will prove to be a rebuttal of terrorist efforts, President Barack Obama declared at the opening of a major climate summit in Paris. What greater rejection of those who would tear down our world than marshaling our best efforts to save it, Obama said Monday at the COP21 conference being held at a highly secured site outside the French capital 2 weeks after ISIS terrorists carried out a bloody rampage. We have to come to Paris to show our resolve, Obama said, saying he offered condolences to the French people. Well, thank you at least for that, Mr. President. I gotta tell you, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when this report got back to the leader of ISIS. What? The president plans to respond to our jihad by doing more about climate change? Oh no! Say it isn't true! Boy, we'll need to think twice before we do something like that again. And then this was from ABC News in February of 2015. In his interview with Vox, President Obama said the media absolutely overstates the threat of terrorism in comparison to the threat of climate change. Yeah, from the guy that was out on the golf course when people's heads were being cut off by ISIS. ISIS, whom he had called the junior varsity team. In October of 2014, we also had some fun with Secretary of State John Kerry. He gave a very interesting lecture on climate change. I'm reading from the Christian Post. Citing scripture, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's... Well, I've got to stop right there. Just to begin with a phrase like citing scripture, this ought to be good. John Kerry is about to cite scripture. It ought to be really good. Anyway, citing scripture, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said that protection of majority Muslim countries included actions against climate change because those nations are most susceptible. At a ceremony to install Texas lawyer Sharik H. Zafar as the special representative to Muslim communities for the State Department in Washington, D.C. on September 3rd, Kerry said stewardship of the planet is stated overtly in Genesis and that the Christian and Muslim faiths are inextricably linked. Our faiths are inextricably linked on any number of things that we must confront and deal with in policy concepts today, Kerry said. Our faiths are inextricably linked on the environment. For many of us, respect for God's creation also translates into a duty to protect and sustain His first creation, Earth, the planet. Before God created man, He created heaven and earth. Confronting climate change is, in the long run, one of the greatest challenges that we face, and you can see this duty or responsibility laid out in scriptures clearly, beginning in Genesis. And Muslim-majority countries are among the most vulnerable. Our response to this challenge ought to be rooted in a sense of stewardship of Earth, and for me, and for many of us here today, that responsibility comes from God. Oh, very good. Now, just where was that part in Genesis, the part which talked about climate change due to carbon emissions? Oh, yeah, it's not there. But since Kerry is quoting from the Bible, shall we assume he accepts the entire Bible? Does he accept that Jesus was God incarnate, not merely a prophet of God, as the Quran claims, the Quran which makes Muhammad a false prophet if it's claiming that Jesus was not God? Does he accept that Muhammad is a false prophet, speaking of the Quran and the Bible being inextricably linked? Does he accept the Bible's position on abortion? Does he accept the Bible's position on homosexuality? Of course not. When politicians quote scripture, the quotes are about as accurate as their campaign promises, unless they're promising to do stupid things, like blaming every problem of the world on climate change just to score cheap political points. And in October of 2015, Kerry at the Universal Exposition in Milan said, "Now I'm not telling you that the crisis in Syria was caused by climate change, but the devastating drought clearly made a bad situation worse." Yeah, that's it, Mr. Kerry. Or let me throw out another possible scenario. Just ponder this remote explanation. Thoughtless, irresponsible remarks about climate change being the greatest threat to our planet may just be the very reason why bloodthirsty dictators are doing their saber rattling in the first place. Climate change did not cause any of these problems. Spineless, gutless, incompetent appeasement and overemphasis on climate change is causing these problems. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Often I get readers' comments for the articles I write in my column. Here's one for an article that was called When Liberal Values Collide. He says, I am one old American who is slightly to the left socially and slightly right fiscally, so I refer to my beliefs as moderate. Yeah, sure. Everybody likes to view himself as a moderate these days. Okay, let's read on. We'll see just how moderate he is. He says, I do not agree with abortion philosophically, but I am unalterably opposed to outlawing the practice. See, there you have it. He's personally against abortion, but it's okay for you to have one. This makes him a moderate. And of course, since he's fiscally conservative, that makes him a moderate too. But how moderate is he on the subject of abortion? Let's read on. He says, I have no desire to force women with an unwanted fetus to the back alleys where they once had to go if they weren't affluent enough to go to Denmark or Sweden. I do not believe that we should still be arguing the point since there are too many options to unwanted pregnancies. Oh, another moderate position. We shouldn't even be arguing about it. We're talking about a human life, and we shouldn't even be arguing about it. It should be settled. That's his moderate position. Anyway, he goes on. I believe that abortion is properly the decision of the female who can square it with herself, her doctor, and her God. We men should stay the hell out of it. Okay, I guess this guy really prides himself on being a sensitive male. Boy, he sure told me we men should stay the hell out of it. My friends, how interesting when somebody is against abortion personally, but does not want to see it outlawed. With all due respect for an obvious sincere viewpoint, my reader is invited to consider a few tugging yet seldomly asked questions. Why exactly are you against abortion? Is it because you believe deliberate pregnancy termination is accomplished only by taking a human life? Should your answer be yes, then why is it okay for somebody else to take a human life? Or are we merely discussing a form of birth control? In that case, why be against abortion philosophically? Now, I'm convinced it is the taking of a life. In fact, science is now convinced of that. But I know people still hold different views. And if your view is that it's not really the taking of a human life, then why are you against it? Probably you're against it because it is the taking of a human life, right? If it's not the taking of a human life, then it is nothing wrong. It is just a form of birth control. As for men, staying the hell out of it. Such utterances may sound like humble, sanctimonious words from a modern, progressive male. But before allowing popular statements to move faster than a quick card trick, perhaps we'd be better served to back up for a less hasty examination. Naturally, any decent society should embrace women's rights. Do these rights extend to baby women as well? If there is a living human being inside of a prospective mother, are we not talking about a body and life of its own? Or is this unborn child nothing but property? Property was an emotionally charged buzzword embraced by Southern plantation owners in pre-Civil War times. Such proud aristocrats insisted their Northern neighbors should stay the hell out of it. What right, after all, did Massachusetts or Pennsylvania have to impose personal morality on Virginia or Georgia? The Supreme Court's infamous Dred Scott decision gave legal legs to that position. Something to ponder. Just in case anyone wants to also quote a similar, more modern Supreme Court ruling, Roe versus Wade, in which the unborn child is also referred to as property. Or would you argue less about property and more about men not understanding the experience of pregnancy abortion? Forgive my crude analogy, but have you ever held up a 7-Eleven store? No? Does this mean you are in no position to judge others who do hold up 7-Eleven stores? After all, you have never shared their experience. As a matter of fact, can you think of any situation aside from abortion where you personally object to harming innocent people yet publicly condone the action? Obviously, our most important question associated with abortion asks whether or not a human being has been destroyed. But there is another related injustice, one seldom discussed or even thought about. People love to embrace a woman's right to choose. Does this sacred right of choice extend to men as well? Can men decide whether or not to be parents? If a guy marries in good faith, agreeing with his wife that they are going to have children together if his wife then becomes pregnant, only to later change her mind? Does he have any say whatsoever? Is a man's right to raise offspring forever under the jurisdiction of his mate simply because he isn't carrying their baby in his own body? Think about this. Think! They decide together to have a baby. She changes her mind. She now wants an abortion. Dad may honestly believe his own child is about to be literally killed. Doesn't matter. Regardless of any personal moral considerations, this presupposed right to be a parent simply does not exist. Be it birth or abortion, he is barred from participating in any verdict. However, and this is very important, track with me, should this very same man impregnate a woman in or out of marriage, will she not sue him for palimony if she wants to keep the kid and he refuses to take responsibility for their child? Would he be able to say, whoa, wait a minute, this pregnancy has nothing to do with me. It's her body and her choice whether or not to bring that baby into the world. If she wants him, let her take care of him. Our poor friend would be laughed out of court, and you know it. A summary of today's peculiar logic. While an unborn infant is inside of a woman, it is hers and hers alone. Her partner has absolutely nothing to do but support her decision. But as soon as a child is delivered, at the moment it is born, it automatically becomes joint property, creating equal responsibility for both. What an amazing difference geography can make, especially when that geography is a womb. Consistency seems to be fleeting. Since Americans love to brag about choice, we'd be well advised to find a good-looking glass asking our mirror on the wall why choice isn't offered to all. Such a privilege certainly isn't granted to others. For that matter, unborn babies don't receive a whole lot of choice either. Meanwhile, are you aware that many leaders in the various pro-life organizations are women? Feminists for Life is but one example. Abortion is not a man versus women's issue, but rather a point of tension within sexes. As for a woman reconciling the decision with her God, my friend, are you suggesting abortion is right or wrong only within the context of a religious belief? If somebody used his religious belief to say abortion was wrong, you'd jump all over that and you know it. But I don't associate it merely with religion myself. Would not a subject such as life and death be just as important to atheists? Of course it is. And there are a lot of atheists who object to abortion simply because it's wrong. It has nothing to do with their beliefs in God. Meanwhile, we still haven't dealt with the biggest elephant in the room. How exactly are people defining abortion anyway? I was in a panel discussion once with a pro-choice doctor. They asked him to define abortion. He said, an abortion is a termination of the fetus. Well, I had a chance to ask a few questions. Doesn't termination mean kill? Isn't fetus a Latin word for baby? My friends, in his novel 1984, George Orwell predicted a time when society would change its speech to nullify the effects of human actions. 1984 has arrived. In fact, Newspeak has brought us into the 21st century and will travel far into the 21st century. Now, In all fairness, many women, when they have an abortion, do not think of it as murder. In our zeal to call actions what they truly are, let us refrain from harsh accusations. Certainly doctors who perform abortions realize just exactly what they are doing, but young, frustrated women led to believe, for whatever reasons, that abortion is simply another form of birth control are not cold-blooded killers, neither shall they be labeled as such. Still, it is not impossible for people to peer beyond cliches or disguised words. Courage often cures brainwashing, enabling a person to admit that abortion equals death. Interestingly enough, many of today's pro-life advocates are people who at one time or another had abortions themselves, or who were prominently pro-choice. Three very interesting individuals representing this changed position are Norma McCorvey, plaintiff in the famous Roe v. Wade case that led to the Supreme Court's 1973 ruling to legalize abortion, Sandra Cano, plaintiff of the companion case, Doe v. Dalton, and Bernard Nathanson, an outspoken doctor who founded the National Abortion Rights Action League and who performed abortions himself. He's against it now. These simple observations are offered in a spirit of open discussion, something my friend says he doesn't want to have. I believe we need to rethink our positions. Perhaps you still are not convinced that a human life is at stake. Even so, should we not err on the side of caution? Do not all human beings have a right to discuss ethics, be they male or be they female? Someday, when society finally concludes that legalized infanticide is being disguised behind a more convenient word, abortion, we will all know what decision needs to be made. Who are we kidding? This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Hey, are you frustrated with our incompetent government? Well, maybe we shouldn't be so hard on them. After all, many institutions in the private sector are every bit as lame. I recall a time I needed to get a checking account problem straightened out. Not the kind of simple situation a teller could take care of. No, this needed one of the heavy guns, somebody from customer service. Ever since my bank had been bought out by another bank, morning problem solving became as common as the chirping of birds and the morning dew on the flowers. Because this little scenario had already been repeated with more performances than Broadway's Les Miserables, I could easily estimate my time sitting in one of those comfortable chairs while some five people were ahead of me. Determined to beat the system, I awakened early, drove to the local branch, which opens at 9 o'clock, and arrived at 9:02. That's 9:02. If you have something to write with, write that down. I showed up at 9:02. Only one person was ahead of me. Good job, Bob. No waiting for five people this time. And then, looking around, I realized that only one of the customer service representatives was even in yet. Lots of desks, but only one guy in yet, and he, alas, was assisting the first fellow who evidently pressed his face against the door at 8:59, gambling that one of their watches would be a minute fast. Naturally, this earlier bird had 30 minutes worth of problems, leaving me with the same obligatory half-hour wait. No, I was not delayed by a bunch of customers. Instead, I had to wait around for the bankers to roll in. Somewhere, in some shady board meeting around the nice polished oak table, careful, delicate strategy figures out how to make our banks just as inconvenient to their customers as is humanly possible. Financial institutions aren't quite as fun as a day at Disneyland, are they? Then again, maybe they are. Everybody knows how long it can take to park at Disneyland. Since for many years we've had those cheaper annual passes, the drill was quite familiar to us. On this crisp, chipper morning, we planned on arriving at the parking structure with enough time to catch the shuttle and arrive at least close to when the happiest place on earth opened its pearly gates. Much to our irritation and disappointment, Disneyland parking was closed, with Magic Kingdom traffic being redirected through all kinds of Anaheim streets on a red cone labyrinth that rivaled Mr. Toad's wild ride. Like cattle, we, along with hundreds of other automobiles, were being herded into a parking garage of a hotel where we were instructed to wait for a shuttle bus back to Disneyland. If you're guessing right now that I was curious enough to ask what was going on, then you too, as Jeff Foxworthy used to put it, are smarter than a fifth grader. Anyway, here's the story, and you'll find out that the people who run Disneyland apparently are not smarter than fifth graders. Disneyland anticipated a very busy day and made a special deal with this hotel because they were expecting an unusually large crowd. So big, their own parking structures would not be able to hold all the cars. And so, for the sake of those poor, unfortunate, fashionably late pilgrims who might not arrive until the middle of the afternoon, Disney's parking garages were kept empty and waiting for them. It was an extra half hour to be redirected to the hotel, followed by an additional half hour waiting around for the bus with its drive back through traffic. An hour delay because of our bright idea about showing up early. Exactly why they chose to make things easy on the tardy and punish those who were dumb enough to get there on time, I'm sure I don't know. Perhaps they were taking their cue from typical present-day America, which seems to reward and bail out every single citizen or non-citizen except the responsible. Oh well, next time I'll follow the example of Alice in Wonderland's white rabbit. I guess by being late, that crafty old critter knew what he was doing, after all. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious. Thank you. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church.
Skyline Church.
Question which was sent to me. Bob, my daughter claims to be a humanist. Is there a difference between an atheist and a humanist? Well, that's a very good question, my friend. They are technically different, although even a humanist will often call himself an atheist as well. Humanists believe that God is unreachable and irrelevant to human affairs, even if he does exist. So a humanist like your daughter won't deny the existence of God. They'll just say that people are in charge of their own destiny. They shouldn't be looking to God. On the other hand, an atheist, and here I mean an official philosophical atheist who's thought about it, an atheist is convinced that all arguments put forth so far for the existence of God are flawed ones. If he ever encounters a better case, if somebody can make a better case, he says he will consider it, but in the meantime, he has reached the tentative conclusion that God does not live. Often atheists will also point to the suffering of the world as evidence for the non-existence of God. Now, just for clarification, many professing atheists do not define themselves so specifically. The description you just heard me refer to would be used by those who actually organize themselves into official atheist clubs. Often, without thinking of all the implications and without being involved with any kind of association, some person will simply say, "God doesn't exist," or "I do not believe in God." Although such people also would call themselves atheists, they should not be confused with those who would define their atheism more carefully. Of course, both humanists and atheists are making one major blunder. They are far too quick to assume that God is not making himself known. Neither have they thought about the implications of a universe apart from a creator. There can be no purpose to life if we live by randomness and chance, and nobody lives his or her life as though they were a mere accident. People live as though there is value to life. People talk about codes of ethics that we should follow. Even when somebody objects to suffering, they're saying we shouldn't suffer. You start talking about shoulds and shouldn'ts, all of a sudden you're moving beyond randomness and chance. This means even an atheist lives as if there is a God. And naturally, a humanist does too. Now, an agnostic is one who has not made up his mind about God and remains open. Next to theism, I find that position to be the most intellectually honest. If you're interested in more detail, I did do a whole series of podcasts here on the CGM Radio Network. Just go to cgmradio.com/Bob. Find episode 281, A Credible Case for the Existence of God, and there are many, at least 8 or 9 or so, which follow in that series. In the meantime, this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Always good to be joined by my producer, Brendan Thomas. Brendan, what is on your radar for tonight?
So, first things first, Jim Barrier with his sports picks. Breaking news here. He lost again.
He lost again.
I know.
We were kind of congratulating him for maybe being close to winning last week.
Unfortunately, Duke lost last night to my Tar Heels. So I'm a huge North Carolina fan between the two of them. I did apply to North Carolina younger, but they said, no, you don't have the... It was especially because I was outside the state too.
Well, you know, Brendan, he may have lost, but there's always a silver lining. And that silver lining is that we can pick on him for it next week and ridicule him.
And if we've missed out on that, then we got another week in April to do that. So
there we go.
Next thing I wanted to bring up is some celebrity passing aways recently. Taylor Hawkins, the drummer of Foo Fighters, passed away at 50. Jeff Carson, who I grew up listening to when I was a kid, he was a country singer, passed away at the age of 58. From the one-hit wonder band The Wanted, they were a boy band back in the 2000s. One of the singers, Tom Parker, passed away at the age of 33. This is a shout out to my wife because she loves this guy, C.W. McCall. He did the song Convoy.
The truck convoy song.
And back in the 50s, he used to advertise for Wonder Bread back in the day. So he passed away at the age of 93. And just today, Estelle Harris passed away at the age of 93. Famous actress. You should know her as George Costanza's mother in Seinfeld.
Oh, of course.
Mrs. Potato Head.
Georgie, what are you doing in there?
Yeah, exactly.
She was hilarious.
Absolutely.
It's always so sad when celebrities die. Although somebody in his 90s, that's easier than when somebody in his 30s passes away.
The 30 one was due to a long battle with cancer. So our prayers go out to all the friends and family of those. So now let's get into the main topic I wanted to talk about tonight. This past Tuesday, the Parental Rights and Education Bill was signed by Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida. It's dubbed as the Don't Say Gay Bill. Now, the first thing I want to say is thank you so much for sending me that article.
Because
it's not
saying you can't say gay. It's saying you can't go in and teach little boys that they might be girls.
No, when I read it at first, I thought, okay, so you can't teach sex education to kindergarten through third grade, which, by the way, it never happened to me. My earliest time of sex education was fifth grade. So even then, I don't.
Which I think is a better time for it.
Exactly. But no, that's not what this bill says at all. It doesn't say that you can't teach sex education to kids between kindergarten and third grade. However, it prohibits the discussion about sexual orientation or gender identity. Now, the issue I have with this bill is quite big. So, first thing I have an issue with is how vague every single term is on this bill. Now, this bill, if you have read it before, it's only 7 pages, which is fine. The shortest document to be in a bill for Congress before, and this is in a national state, has been 2 pages before, back in the 60s. That's fine. And then the longest, obviously, was 1,000
Well, it's better than a 1,000-page bill that nobody reads before exactly. they vote on it.
Exactly. So that's the longest. The average length of a bill is usually 22 pages. That's the average length. So 7 pages, you're kind of shortening it, but that's fine. But the issue is so much about the vagueness. So when I read the term about prohibits classroom discussion about sexual orientation or gender identity, it follows up with the words in certain grade levels or in a specified manner. What does that mean exactly? It later states that, yes, kindergarten through third grade is what they're talking about.
So is that the specified manner that they mean?
I think so, but that is so
Well, vague. I agree with you. I of course, I do not have a problem with this bill. However, I do agree with you that when bills are written in a vague way, then people can make them into anything they want. And I do agree that that's a problem.
Exactly. And what did we discuss about, I want to say last week or 2 weeks ago, about this bill? This is obviously going to go to the Supreme Court. This is obviously going to get fought over a law. And some judge is going to decide what these words mean exactly. And no one's going to be happy in the end. Liberals aren't going to be happy. Conservatives are definitely not going to be happy.
Or the judge may decide it's too vague and ask them to clarify it too, I suppose.
Exactly. So in the end, it's just going to cause even more mayhem, I think, in the long run. And it also states here, anything in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. That also can mean anything. At all.
Well, like, I assume, now of course every state has different standards. I assume Florida's standards would be something we could take a look at there.
Well, do you know there's, I can't.
Oh, I don't live in Florida. I don't know what their standards are. I know they're a more conservative state, but I would hope and assume that when they talk about Florida's state standards, that somebody could get a copy of exactly what that is. And maybe they all know what they're talking about. I can only hope.
Or again, they're just going to judge what these words mean. And again, it just frustrates me even more. This also allows parents to sue the school boards or the teachers themselves if they talk about these topics of sexual orientation and things of that nature. Why pick on the teachers specifically? They are so underpaid. They have always been picked on by parents constantly. In fact, there was a recent study done by the American Psychological Association. And it was showing that 40% of school administrators across the country have been violently threatened by parents of the students that they teach. And that is really, really extreme to me for these parents to be acting this way, whether it be suing or even threatening their lives.
Well, now, one thing I want to be careful about, there have been times where people have gone to PTA meetings or school board meetings, and they've just gotten a little loud, and the teachers, I hear them on the news afterwards acting like violence was threatened when it wasn't. I do agree that if somebody is really threatening violence against anybody for anything, that is a problem.
Mm-hmm. But so here's the basic thing I'm going to get at too with Governor DeSantis about this. To me, this was a win-win situation for him no matter what. A, if he doesn't get this done and the judge says, no, I'm not going to allow this bill to pass, at least he tried something different. He at least he said, you know what, I'm going to stand for something, and this is a policy I'm going to get behind. And then if the judge says, no, I actually like this idea, and we're going to go through with it, maybe other states might look into this bill and say, hey, we might want to pass this along. Definitely other conservative states for sure will pass this along for sure. North Dakota, Texas. Texas is starting to become a purple state.
Depends on what part of Texas we're talking about these days.
Right, right. So who knows what will happen here. There's a couple more issues I have with this bill too. Students who have been abused by their parents because of sexual orientation or gender identity cannot go to teachers as a resource for support. That's one of the things that is said in the bill.
It actually says in the bill that somebody who's been abused by their parents for that reason cannot go and...
Yes, if you want to, I can read the whole
thing. Because any kind of child abuse is just against the law, period. That I would think that would be protected anyway in some other way.
But let's say this child is scared to talk to his parent or to tell anybody this, and maybe the only resource they can really trust is a teacher of theirs, or for that matter, maybe a school administrator too. It's really, really scary for those kids in Florida if that's the case. Now, I'm not saying all kids are like this. There's very few, I bet, and I bet parents treat their kids with the utmost respect in Florida. I'm saying there are some, though, and this is a really, really scary situation for them, and maybe they might need to change some things in that part of the bill, or maybe the whole bill entirely. A judge will look at this. I have a feeling for it. Another thing, too, it's so vague and unknown that maybe this could include heterosexual orientation as well. It doesn't say that in the bill at all about heterosexual teachings or anything like that. So somebody could say, well, I want my child to be gay, and they can take this to the Supreme Court. And thus, this whole thing can get blown out of proportion once again. So that's why I am so...
Wait, you're saying maybe they would be promoting heterosexuality and a parent who wants their kids to be gay might sue them over that?
Yes. And the bill is so vague that it could get around.
Well, now, my understanding of this bill, and I was unaware that there was anything in there about parents abusing children. So I'll take a look at that. But my primary understanding of the purpose of this bill is to not be going in and talking about gender identity and sexual orientation K through third grade. Would you agree that a parent has a right to say, I'm their parents and I don't want my children listening to that? And then if the teachers go ahead and do it anyway and say, look, we know better than you, we're the teachers, I would think that at that juncture, they do have a right to be sued.
I could see that. I grew up in Virginia, so I had to sign a permission slip every single year to let the parents know, hey, we're going to be doing sex education. If you are not comfortable, if your child is not comfortable, sign this form and give it to us, and we can have them do something else entirely, whether it be go to the library and read a book.
And I think that's a good way to work some of that out, although I also think it's insane to be going into a kindergarten. I have to wonder how many K through third grades are even going to their parents and saying, I think I'm gay. I don't think they even think that unless somebody puts that idea in their mind.
100%.
And if it's some teacher at school putting that idea in their mind, that is a serious problem.
Like, I remember having to step in for a regular preschool class. This was not a special ed class or anything. It's just a regular preschool. And the teacher's going around, are you a boy or girl? Boy. Are you a girl or boy? Girl. And they all got it correct about their genders. So that's maybe something that you can look into if you want. Personally, I don't think K through 3 think of that idea. And I don't think they do either.
I think that's the problem, is they're going in and they're pushing it. And if that's the primary purpose of the bill, then maybe there's some things they could reword and retweak. But I would say that if that's the primary purpose, I'm all in all for it.
Like, I would say most people kind of get that idea around the middle school area, or I guess in California they call it junior high area, where it's sixth grade through eighth grade. They possibly like hear words and they're like, well, maybe I might be questioning that kind of stuff. But then,
yeah, when they're starting to go through adolescence, it's a little bit different, because then they may all on their own start saying, I'm starting to feel this way or that way. Mm-hmm. And then it's something to be addressed.
But then this bill says certain grade levels or in a specified manner, which then again, that sixth grade through eighth grade parent may say, hey, this child heard these words and I'm going to sue the school board because of it. I almost forgot. Parents can also now step into these classes anytime they want without any discretion.
Well, they've been doing that on Zoom for the last 2 years. That's one of the reasons we're having this problem, is because of COVID and the lockdowns. Kids were being taught on Zoom, and for the first time, a lot of parents are hearing what their kids are being taught. I'm not sure that's really a problem. I do think parents have a right to know what their kids are learning. Now, when I was in junior high or high school, I would have hated having my parents in the room. I mean, I personally would have just hated that.
And I think in today's society, that's the same thing. I can't tell you how many times where my mom works as a substitute teacher, and anytime she was my substitute teacher, all my classmates would give it to me and be like, ha, that's your mom. You could call her mommy if you want and all that stuff. And it makes me feel so embarrassed in it.
I do see that problem, Brendan. Yeah. I really do. But on the other side of it, though, is I do think parents have a right to know what their kids are being taught. And sometimes the school is not particularly forthcoming about it. So
I'm just saying, though, at the same time, these are unannounced. They can come in unannounced.
Well, a principal will come in and watch unannounced if he's getting some feedback about a teacher.
But
so
that's a school administrator, not a parent.
But it goes back to the philosophy, I think, of who we believe is ultimately responsible for the education of the children. I think the ones responsible to raise the children are the parents, and that the school teachers and principals have those kids on loan. So I do believe that a parent should have a right to go and sit in and find out what's going on. I think if it's a responsible parent and a parent with any brains and feelings for their kids, they're not going to do that very often. Or at least one thing that they could do is say, I'll go to a different class that's same curriculum my kid's in, but I just won't go to the one where my own kid is in and make him feel bad or weird. That might be an equitable way to handle it.
So you think the parents could actually go into other classrooms?
Well, I'm just saying saying that might be, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, I'm just saying that might be an equitable solution. Let's say all the third grade classes have the same curriculum. Okay, I don't want to embarrass my kid. I'll go into some other class where nobody knows who I am. And in doing so, I'll still find out what my kid is learning, but I won't have to embarrass my kid. That might be a way to kind of address both sides of the problem.
I don't know. I'm kind of different on that. I think as if I'm a teacher, I'm kind of uncomfortable with that idea, knowing that a stranger can pop in anytime they want, and I have no idea who that student's parent is, and who knows what the background of that parent is on top of that.
Well, at PTA meetings, I'm assuming that teachers are getting to know who parents are. They should be knowing some of that. But yeah, I can understand them being uncomfortable, but I can also understand a parent saying, I have no idea what's being taught to my child. And my child comes home and says, I'm thinking of becoming a woman, even though I'm a little boy. And I can see them being uncomfortable with that too.
I guess so.
You don't have to agree. We're just talking.
I
understand where you're coming.
No, thank you. A lot of this is going to have to change for sure in the bill, whether that be through a court case or hopefully Governor Ron DeSantis can look at the bill.
Certainly vague language needs to stop being vague. I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. So either be more specific or just entirely get rid of the bill, redo the whole thing and put that specificity. There we go.
School could just stop teaching all this trap with a capital C, and then nobody will have to have a bill about anything.
So you think
they could just be smart enough to quit teaching this nonsense?
So then you think the parents should be responsible then for teaching these kids?
Well, a lot of parents are resorting to homeschools now because they don't like what's going on in the public school. I do believe parents are ultimately responsible. Now, that doesn't mean that every parent's a good teacher. No. But I think they're responsible to know who's teaching their kids and what they're teaching their kids.
I think it's also insane that this is applied to charter schools, too. That's quite interesting to me, because I feel as a parent who's going to be spending that amount of money to put your student through, you would trust the teachers enough to know.
You would think, but if many of them did and then found out by going on Zoom and listening to some of these classes that trust was misplaced, well, then I can't blame them for being upset about that.
Yeah. So we're just going to have to wait and see. But in the meantime, we're coming to the end of our show. So thank you for this wonderful discussion. It definitely opens my mind up a little bit more. And again, we will keep an eye out on this parental rights and education bill, because I definitely am thinking it's not going to stand.
Well, you know something? We're able to have this conversation with mutual respect. And we are discussing this more than a lot of the people that are making these rules and laws are discussing it.
Yes.
And we are doing it in an uncensored way more than the others are uncensoring themselves.
Very true. Let's just be glad
we still have the freedom of speech to do a show like this. Okay, this is Bob Siegel. We will see you next time.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.